The Leafs with a very impressive win earlier today. 4-3, that's, you know, you go into Jersey, you beat them to kill the streak.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go into Mini. It's a holiday down there. That building was rocking. Yeah. People were ready to party. And the Leafs get off to a quick lead. And that's an impressive win, man. Impressive win considering the lineup. What's going on with the Leafs.
That team should be very, very proud of themselves and the way they've battled and competed.
Absolutely. All right, let's head back down to Minnesota. We caught up with Mike Johnson earlier. Johnny was between the benches. And now we've got an analyst on the other side of things. He's a former NHLer, and he's with Bally Sports North. Here is Wes Waltz. How you doing, Wes?
Hey, I'm doing good, boys. How are we doing tonight?
Doing very well. We're just talking about Dean Evason, man. I love the fact that this guy behind the bench, like, he is ready to snap on any given time. Is he fun to watch? Because he's animated behind the bench.
Well, he was animated tonight way more than he normally is. He's actually pretty calm behind the bench. He does get emotional from time to time after goals are scored late in game. Yeah, in games, but I mean, he was an emotional player when he played, right? And he's pretty much the same way behind the bench, but he was obviously a little more animated tonight than he normally was. I don't think he was very happy with the amount of times the net come off its moorings with mm-hmm. Matt Murray when the Wild had some extended zone time, especially there in the second period. So that was probably a bigger reason why we saw his head get to a different shade of red than we normally do.
Yeah, and that's been kind of consistent with Murray. It happened a couple of nights ago in Jersey, and like, what's your read on that, Wes? Is it intentional? Is it fluky? Because I can understand why Evason would be kind of rattled, yeah, considering the details that you just pointed out.
Yeah, you know what? It's really weird, because I got to be honest. The first time it happened in the first period, I was working the game tonight, and it kind of almost looked like an accident. It looks like it would look accident on purpose. I was kind of up in the air, and I even said on the air, I don't know if this is one of those cagey things where he kind of pushed off his even harder than he normally does, but something we're going to continue to watch. And I had no idea that this was and has been a trend for Matt Murray and his and how he plays. I mean, Freddie Shabbat, who's our goaltender coach, he had some quotes. I don't know if it was his quotes after the game or if it came from Evason, but Freddie Shabbat said it is a trend that he has Matt Murray. And the one in the second period was a great play by him, because he didn't get called for a penalty. And I think the Wild had the puck in the offensive zone and for a minute and 20 seconds and had fresh guys on the ice, on it. They were able to get guys on and off the ice in a one-goal game. And that was a big play in the game for sure. And that one, without question, was pushed off with his arm. He had the overhead angle. You could see he pushed it off. And then the third one, again, it was kind of those tricky ones. I don't know if you can actually blame him for the third one, but it come off very, very easily. So I don't know. You know, the Wild didn't generate, for me, the Wild didn't generate enough offensively. And I don't know what Johnny had to say. I didn't listen to your interview with him. I know he was between the benches there tonight. But, you know, I personally got to give the Toronto Maple Leafs a lot of credit. They played a great, strong, solid game. They played exactly how you need to play to win games when you have a depleted lineup. And I think, you know, I've watched this happen a million times in NHL hockey. When you get injuries in your lineup, it helps you get to the type of game you need to play to win over a consistent basis. Now, the tricky part is when guys come back and they get healthy, like, can you continue to play the same way, or do you just continue to play loose? So for me, you know, being out west, you don't see the Toronto Maple Leafs as often as I would like, to be honest with you, but and I'd love for that team to have some more success in the playoffs. And the way they're winning games right now, guys, by defending, I think that's going to serve this team really, really well when they get into the big boy games in the playoffs.
Well, Wes, we cover the team and we talk about them. We watch them a lot. So, you know, we've kind of formed opinions on Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares, a lot of the elite players on the team. But, you know, another strong night for those guys. Nylander scores, Marner scores. What'd you think of the Leafs' big boys tonight against Minnesota?
I thought for the most part they were pretty quiet. Obviously, Nylander's the one kid that, I mean, any of those guys at any given moment, you know, they just need a half a chance to score. And that's what makes the Leafs so dangerous, is because you can do a great job checking them all night, but they just need one chance to score and it's in. And it's something that this Minnesota Wild team had last year with Fiala and Kaprizov. I think we finished fourth or fifth in the NHL in goals for, and it's just been such a struggle for the Wild. And you know, I've really grown to love John Tavares' game. He's just a winner, man. You know, he doesn't move around the ice like he did 5-6 years ago, but now he's playing the game more with his brain. And he's a leader, right? He's just dragging these guys into playing the right way all the time. And I mentioned it on the air tonight. I watched, you know, Austin Matthews block some shots defensive, you know, in the defensive zone, and something that you don't always see all the time. You know, we play Colorado quite often. They're in our division. And, you know, when down the stretch the last couple of years, I would start to see Nathan MacKinnon blocking more shots late in games. And he was doing it in the playoffs. So those are the type of things that can galvanize a team, that can bring a team along. When you start seeing your stars blocking shots and laying out and playing the right way, there's a lot to be said for that, guys. I'm telling you. And if you've got a locker room full of guys that love each other, you can go a long way.
We're chatting with Wes Waltz of Bally Sports North, former NHLer, longtime Minnesota Wild. Leafs getting past the Wild 4-3 today. We mentioned, obviously, that we had Mike Johnson on, and Johnny was between the benches, and he said the same thing about the way the Leafs defended. But he mentioned one player in particular where that did not apply, and he said that's when Kaprizov was on the ice. He's like, when Kaprizov was on the ice, it was basically a fire drill, like make sure you can do whatever you can to stop this guy. I mean, he has hit the ground running in his NHL career. He is an unbelievable player. You get to see him day in, day out. You know, people in Toronto don't. What can you tell us about the ceiling of Kaprizov and, you know, how well he's playing and what could be what his future might look like as an NHL player?
Well, what you guys witnessed today is what we know about Kirill Kaprizov. I mean, we watched that pretty... I mean, he's definitely the last three or four games has elevated his game in another 10-15%. But, guys, that's what we've watched here since he's come into the league. I mean, you know, I'm obviously doing these games on television, and I watched the first 30, 40 games of his career, and I'm thinking to myself on the broadcast, like, I want to compare him to Sidney Crosby. That's how good he is in the offensive zone. I couldn't bring myself to say it, but, you know, earlier in his career when he had 30, 40 games in under his belt, but now that he's played 100 games and I'm watching him do it night in, night out in the offensive zone, the way he can skate and move and protect the puck and his heart and how hard this guy plays. I mean, he's a top 3-4 forward in the NHL. You know, we play here in Minnesota and flyover country too, so not a lot of, you know, Canadian people know exactly how good this is. We know exactly how good he is, and obviously the Wild haven't had a whole lot of success with Kirill Kaprizov in the playoffs. I think he had 6 or 7 goals in the series the Wild lost last year, but he's an amazing hockey player, and the guy comes to play and he plays that hard every night, and it's one of the reasons why the people are hanging. You see 97 jerseys all over the place. He's a special player, and if this Wild club in the next couple of years could ever go on a crazy playoff run, the rest of the world would understand exactly what this guy brings to the table.
Well, Wes, in this market, we always seem to talk about the future and where players are going to go, where teams are going to go. And one of the guys who's probably a person of interest plays on Minnesota, and that would be Matt Dumba. And a lot of markets are going to think, well, there's a guy we can use. Like, how would you describe Matt Dumba's game? Like, what is he going to bring to a team if he were to go somewhere? But ideally, I guess you would want him staying in Minnesota long term. Like, I don't know, where is that something that's going to happen? And if it doesn't, like, what is he bringing to a team?
Well, I it's hard to say. I mean, his name has been brought up in trade rumors for the last 3-4 years, and I'm sure that kind of wears on Matt after a while. The reason his name's in trade rumors over the last 3-4 years is because he has value. You know, but the Wild situation with the buyouts of Ryan Suter and Zach Parise, over the next 3 years, guys, the Wild have cap hits of $6, $7, $8 million for each guy. So there's, you know, $12-13 million of dead money the Wild are giving back to the league every time they take the ice, which makes it very difficult. And obviously, you know, if you move on from Matt Dumba, they've got a really good player playing at the University of Minnesota, Brock Faber, who's a right-handed shot, who I think is going to have an opportunity to probably jump into the Wild lineup right when he gets out of college. He's an outstanding right-handed player, too. So for Leafs fans that are listening, I mean, this guy is a gamer. He's a warrior every night. I mean, he brings it. He plays. I know he was -3 here tonight. You know, he's a guy that really plays hard every night, and he has had some injury issues over the last 3-4 years. he plays a real physical game, and he's not an overly big guy, about 185, 190 pounds. So injuries have been a bit of an issue over the last couple of years, but he's been healthy pretty much all year. And now I wouldn't be surprised at some point here between now and the trade deadline if somebody that needs defensemen gets their hand on him. I'm sure, I don't know what the price is, but I'm sure Billy Guerin is probably looking at the cap situation thinking it would be a spot where the Wild could free up $6 million and spend that money wisely at some point. And Matt Boldy's going to need a contract at some point, too, here. So that money would end up probably just going to Matt. But it's going to be tough sledding, guys, for the Wild next 2-3 years just with the cap situation we got here.
Yeah, that's for sure. It is. It's a unique scenario out there with those buyouts and having to pay the price for that now moving forward. He is Wes Waltz, former NHL, longtime Wild Bally Sports North analyst. Really great of you to take time for us, Wes. We appreciate it, and hopefully we get a chance to do this again down the road.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Wes Waltz, former teammate of Noodles, both in junior and in the NHL.
There we go.
Yeah, if Noodles was here, we'd probably get him to give us a full breakdown. But
yeah,
I just wanted to say, can you imagine if those cap hits were in this market?
Parise,
the dead
and
money. Like I'm looking at it, it's 6.3 each this year. It's 7.3 next year, and 7.3 the year after each.
That's so brutal. Wild.
Each.
It's crazy that Bill Guerin found a way to sell ownership on that idea. And I think it makes sense based on the players. Like Parise and Suter, they're not the players they were.
Parise's still like, he's a player. Like,
right. And Suter's still like playing.
Suter's still like munching minutes.
Yes.
Not the way he used to, but he's playing on a good, like he plays on Dallas. Know,
but I guess.
Good team.
What would, like their contracts were what, 9.5 or, like what was it if they were on like the cap hit was 9-something for a number of years?
It was north of 9.
So they started looking at it and saying, you know, how do you do the math on whether or not the $6 million, $7 million is worth it to actually save the additional $3 million that we would have had to pay them to have on. I don't know. It's a really ballsy play because everyone knows like Minnesota's in big trouble. Like Kaprizov is getting paid. He got his deal.
Yeah.
But he's going to come up at the end of all this.
Well, Wes just said Boldy's going to have to get paid. You had to get rid of Kevin Fiala, mm-hmm. who you traded Granlund for, who's a really good player.
Like,
I think maybe that's something we underestimate a little bit in this market, the fact that they've been up against the cap for a long time, but they've been very efficient at it. Like they haven't had that dead money, that wasteful money, you know, eating away at it. Whatever you have up against the cap is on the ice. That's your product. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wasted.
Yeah. No, like they've had to trade their way out of what would have been likely wasted contracts and give up assets to do it, right? Like Zaitsev is minors, and that's hurt. And if he was still here, that would cause them problems. And getting out from Marlowe's deal and getting out from Mrazek's deal. Like they've made mistakes, like every other team in the league, but they haven't allowed it to either linger or the cap to be affected.
It felt like
they've got out from underneath it by paying collateral to do so.
Yeah, and it felt like when those deals were signed, like Zaitsev and Marlowe were Lou deals, so Kyle inherited those. But anything that Kyle's done, it felt like there was an exit plan with those things in mind. Like something like Mrazek, we knew the exit plan. Kyle knew it. He knew what he was going to have to do, and he could stomach it at the end of the day. Like, I don't know if I could stomach what Mini has. Like, that's
tough,
man.
It really wasn't that much of a savings right away.
Per year.
Yeah, it's like they're paying 12 points, almost 12.7 to...
For two guys not there. Dead money.
Not to be there.
Dead cap.
Imagine that.
Crazy.
Yeah. In a flat cap world where you need superstars, you need highly paid players.
I mean, how do you sell that?
I guess I'd be curious to know how close to the ceiling the Wild are in an average year anyway. In other words, if their owner says, you have a budget, but it's not the cap.
Right.
Like, you know, if the cap is 82, you have 75 million.
Yeah.
Like, are they doing that anyway, where they've been under the cap for a while? Like,
that's a good question.
Working under it anyway?
Someone in that market would have the answer to that, or if you did a little digging. But, like, just from being there on the road and stuff, like, that's not like a typical small market team where, you know, you get 12,000 sleepy fans. And, like, that's
legit.
The state of hockey. It's a sellout every night. They're rowdy. Like, they expect a lot there. And
those are two homegrown guys, two Suter and Parise that went home together.
And that's a market that's hungry to win too. Like they, you know,
yeah, they haven't been really close.
They know hockey. Like they want a winning team, and they haven't been close. Like, have they gotten past the second round?
I don't believe since they've been back in Minnesota.
No, I feel like they might have got to the second
round. And that's 20 years. They've been around for over 20 years.
Yeah.
Like, they've been back in Minnesota for over 20 years. I don't recall a long, like, they have not been in the Cup final for sure since.
No. I think the furthest they may have gotten is the second round. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Yeah.
Which is rich coming from us, where the Leafs haven't gotten out of the second round, but.
Yeah. But listen, a fact is a fact. Exactly. The Leafs have no bearing on the facts of, you know, Minnesota hockey.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is a tough sales pitch. I would guess it was Bill Guerin. My assumption would be Guerin, in order for him to take the job, he probably said, this is what I have to do. So if you're going to hire me, you got to allow me to do this because I can't have these guys. Like, I got to move on from them and
I think he was hired before.
He was hired
before they bought them out.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is when he took the job, he probably looked at it and said, I'm screwed with Suter
and
Parise. You
can't come into the interview and say that.
Why not? He's Bill Guerin. He's been around for a long time. He had a great reputation.
Jonas, I think there's GMs, there's coaches who will go into an interview and say, listen, if you really want me, there's a couple things I'm going to need autonomy over. Mm-hmm. And for him, maybe that was one of them. We're not privy to that.
No,
but maybe
of course.
That was.
That might actually have been a sales pitch where they said, this guy's got some courage to come in here and say, you want, like, if I'm taking this gig, I have to buy these two players out.
Yes.
And I'm telling you what I'm going to do with this.
That was Costanza going into Steinbrenner's office.
And doing the opposite of what everyone else was
doing.
Because if you went in there, you would probably think, well, I have to make it work with these two.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't possibly buy them out. So here's my plan to work alongside them. Or maybe Guerin just said, I'm like, the elephant in the room is these two guys got to go.
It's tough, though.
At that price.
It's tough, too, because now, you like Wes alluded to, you got 2 or 3 years where you know your team is kind of just scraping by.
Yeah.
Like, you just.
Yet they've been a playoff
traction.
They were a playoff team a year ago.
This year's a struggle. They're on the outside looking in.
Yes.
And, you know, Fleury's been hurt. He hasn't played very well. It's just,
they're in the mix, but yes, they're currently on the outside looking.
But what's weird is the contracts aren't that much longer. Like, they could have just ridden this out and I don't know. I don't really understand it.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it was a culture thing. Maybe it was turning over a new leaf.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what happened? Knows? They probably couldn't find any one-way tickets to Robida Island. So then
just have them play. Like, they're playing in the league.
I think Suter, for me, I would have him playing for sure. Maybe you think Parise's lost it a little bit, but he's playing on the Islanders. Mm-hmm. He looks pretty good.
Well, and if you're going to pay 6.5, why not just play 7.5 and have him play for you?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well,
maybe it's something.
But the cap hit was higher than that, was it not?
No, 7.5.
Cap hit was 7.5.
That was the cap hit? Okay.
All right.
Yeah, that's strange.
Anyway, it's just like if that happened here, it would be like we would never stop talking.
Yeah, it would be a non. I'm sure it's a topic of discussion there. I mean, Wes brought it up. Unprovoked, we didn't bring it up.
Yeah,
you know, like you mentioned Dumba and his future, but he mentioned that they're in real cap purgatory.
Yeah,
in Minnesota.
Well, and that could be another casualty of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like Fiala's a casualty. Now you're going to have Dumba potentially. Yep. Like that's a guy who you drafted in the first round. You've
developed. He's a good player, and he might be a casualty. He might.
Yeah.